The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, we have David Grimm, online news editor for Science. He's here to give us a rundown on some of the recent stories from our daily news site. I'm Christy Hamilton. So, Dave, first up, we have a story on probing so-called near-death experiences in the brain. Some people have experienced these moments as floating above their body, watching themselves from outside. How did scientists go about studying the brain during the brink of death?
Well, they couldn't study humans for obvious reasons, so they turned to rodents, specifically rats. And they anesthetized a bunch of rats, and they induced cardiac arrest, which essentially shut off their heart. And then they probed what their brain activity was between that last heartbeat and when the rats actually died. And they saw some pretty interesting stuff.
So what did they find?
Well, what they saw was they actually used an EEG, which is an electroencephalogram, and these EEGs revealed a highly organized brain response in the seconds after cardiac arrest. It didn't seem like random brain activity. It actually seemed like there was some sort of conscious thought going on. And what they saw specifically were oscillations in the low gamma frequency, which previous human research has linked these gamma waves to waking consciousness, meditative states, and even REM sleep. So you can think about potentially dreaming. They also saw what they called top-down signaling in the brain activity of these rats, which is associated in humans with conscious perception and information processing. This increased eightfold compared to the waking state of these animals. And when you put all this together, it suggests that the dying brain is hyperactive in its final seconds. It's producing meaningful conscious activity, at least in these rats, and if the same holds true for people, could help explain a lot of the near-death experiences people have.
So is there any indication that what the rats are experiencing is the same things that humans experience as well?
Well, that's the billion-dollar question. We really have no idea what's going on in the brain of any animal, much less an animal that's having a near-death experience. So even though we're seeing this highly organized brain activity, we really have no way to say that these rats are seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, that they're seeing all their dead rat relatives. we just don't know what's going on. So that's really the big black hole here is even though researchers are seeing what looks like highly organized brain activity, we really don't know what's going on in the minds of these creatures.
So are humans next?
Well, that's a good question, too. And what the researchers say is that they could actually start monitoring brain activity in people undergoing brain surgery that involves cooling the brain and reducing the blood supply to the brain. This procedure has produced near-death experiences in the past. So it might be a good way to show that if people are having these experiences and the researchers can link up specific brain activity with those experiences, that they could show that there actually is a scientific basis for near-death experiences.
All right. Next up, we have a story on why we shouldn't trust the internet. I already don't trust the internet, but now researchers have given us some evidence for why not.
That's right. And it's not necessarily just the internet as a global thing, but more specifically, reviews on the internet. Whether it's Amazon or Yelp or whatever, we're always, a lot of us look at reviews on the internet. We put a lot of faith in them, whether it's to buy a product or potentially go to a restaurant. This study suggests that these reviews are highly subject to manipulation, so you might not want to trust those reviews as much as you think you can.
So how do they go about testing this then?
Well, what they did was they actually looked at a news site, a real-world site that aggregates news stories, and then readers can comment on the news stories, and then users can actually review those comments. So the comments that get a lot of positive reviews tend to go up in visibility, where those that get a lot of negative reviews tend to go down in visibility. And what the researchers said is, can we manipulate this? Can we get people to be more positive about a comment or potentially even more negative about a comment by sort of gaming the system?
And could they?
They could. And what they found was that if they, at least they could halfway that was true, actually. What they found was that if they gamed some of the comments, so they gave them a lot of upvotes, that users were 32% more likely to also give a positive vote to that comment. They didn't see the same thing with negative votes. If they put a lot of negative votes on a comment, that didn't necessarily make other users want to also put a negative vote on that comment. And the researchers think that has a lot to do with human psychology, that people are more skeptical of what they call negative social influence, but that they're more willing to go along with positive opinions from other people.
So what does this all mean then?
Well, it means that you might not want to trust some of those comments on the internet, especially if they're positive comments. The applications for companies are a little less clear. Researchers have shown that if users feel that a company is manipulating a rating online, they're much less likely to trust it.
Finally, we have a story on bone-eating worms found in Antarctic waters. So what can you tell us about these bone worms?
Well, they are worms that eat bones, hence their name. They're actually technically known as ossidacs, and they've only been known since about 2004. And these are really strange creatures. You actually can see a picture of them on the site. Basically, what they look like is they are thread-like worms. They vary from about 0.6 millimeters to 15 millimeters in length. They are mouthless and gutless, yet they're still able to feed on the skeletons of dead animals, including whales, birds, fish, and even cows, assuming they sink to the bottom of the sea. And previous studies have shown that they actually are pretty widely spread throughout the world, but we didn't know until this new study they're actually also found in Antarctica.
So if they don't have mouths, how do they eat bone?
That is a great question. And what they do is they form large colonies of elongated females and in these reddish wavy plumes that function as gills, while their greenish root-like structures release an acid that enables them to tunnel into the bone. And again, you should really check out a picture. These guys are really freaky looking.
So how are bone worms different to shipworms?
So shipworms are another really weird ocean creature, and they're actually not worms despite their name. They're actually mollusks, and they were first found in the 1700s because they were devouring wooden pilings the Dutch used to protect their lowlands from flooding. These are naked cylindrical creatures which bear a pair of tiny shells at one end of their bodies that they use to grind into wood, and then they actually digest that wood. And you can actually see a picture of these guys too on the site. And they have also been found pretty widely throughout the world.
Okay, so what did the researchers find in this study then?
Well, what the researchers did, which was really kind of cool and kind of crazy, was they outfitted these two old deep-sea landers, which are these platforms that are designed to carry equipment and other materials to the seafloor, and they loaded them up with wooden planks and whale bones. And what they were hoping to find, and they basically dropped them to the bottom of the ocean, and what they were hoping to find was whether they would find shipworms and bone worms in Antarctic waters, which is where they put some of these skeletons. And lo and behold, when they pulled the whale bones back up, they were covered in bone worms. But when they pulled up the wood, they didn't find any shipworms.
So what does this all mean?
Well, what it all means for bone worms is that they are very widely spread throughout the world, even in Antarctic waters, which is pretty cool. What it means for shipworms is that they don't appear to be in Antarctic waters, and there's sort of a nice silver lining for that because there are a lot of potentially very famous shipwrecks off the coast of Antarctica. For example, the famous Antarctic explorer Ernest Shackleton, his ship Endurance sank in 1915 in western Antarctic waters. And what's great about potentially not having shipworms in these waters is these shipworms wreak havoc, as you might expect, on shipwrecks because they eat the wood. So it suggests that there may be a lot of famous shipwrecks that still may be down there in the waters off Antarctica.
So what else is on the site this week, Dave?
Well, speaking of wood, we've got a story about how scientists are trying to take wood out of the equation when it comes to creating biofuels of the future. Also a story about the supermassive black hole in the center of our Milky Way galaxy and some new insights into why it's not eating as much as it should be eating. For Science Insider, our policy blog, we've got a story about why activists have destroyed a genetically modified rice field in the Philippines. Also a story about whether a White House science committee needs an ethical review. So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Christy.
David Grimm is the editor of Science's online daily news site. You can check out the latest news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org.